Welcome to Betrayal Trauma Recovery. This is Anne. We have Jeannie Vitone back on today's episode to talk about disclosures and to answer community questions about therapeutic-led disclosures. So if you didn't listen to last week's podcast, go listen to the last episode and then join us again here. You can hear Jeannie's bio there. But before we get back to your questions, we talk a lot about finding the right support on Betrayal Trauma Recovery. And Betrayal Trauma Recovery Group, which is our daily online support group, is the best way to get support and know that you're going to be safe. Know that immediately someone's going to be there that understands, that can validate your experience. There's multiple sessions a day in multiple time zones. You don't have to leave your house. You don't have to get childcare. You can do it from your car. You can do it anywhere that you have cell reception. So please go to btr.org, click on services, look at daily support group. You can check out the session schedule, see if that works for you. We made it so that anyone in the world, depending on your time zone, can usually get onto a group session within 4 to 6 hours. So that means that you don't have to wait, you don't have to set an appointment, you can just hop on and be with women who immediately understand. We also understand that some people have a hard time with groups or it doesn't work with their schedule. So you can also schedule an individual session with any of our coaches from our website, btr.org. Okay, let's go on to another question from a member of our community. She asks, why do few therapists include the state of the family finances in the full disclosure? Whether that happens with a therapist or financial advisor, this is a very important piece of information for her spouse to have. I'm not sure if this is what she's asking, but do you think she's asking about, like, does he have any hidden bank accounts? Does he control the money? Those types of things. Do you think that's what she's asking too?
I do. And I think it is important. If there's a cost to an acting out behavior, I want that included in a disclosure. And if there's any hidden money, I want that included. That is something that I'll say, unless a partner brings to me, I sometimes will forget to ask that. That is not always on the top of my brain. But I have had partners say, I'm concerned about where money's gone. We had money. I never asked about it. It's not there. I want to know. And so then we go, oh, absolutely. Then we launch into it. So I don't know that it's forgotten. I can't speak for others. I don't know that it's forgotten on purpose, or it's just because it's not on the top of our to-do list when we're assessing for sex addiction and betrayals and lies. But it is important. And so I just want to validate that writer who wrote in on this, that it is important. And if it's important to her, I hope that she asks for it to be included in her disclosure.
Yeah. When it comes to financial abuse, right? That's what this is asking about. Like, do you have secret bank accounts? Are you in control of money that she isn't aware of? So this financial abuse piece would be important. That's why at BTR, I really encourage women to look at it from an abuse perspective. So this would be an example of financial abuse. You might want to ask questions about other types of abuse concerns that you have. What types of abusive behaviors may you need to know about, to know what level of safety that you have? And a lot of women don't even know what safety means when they start down this road, or they haven't even considered that there might be sexual coercion or other forms of emotional abuse going on. And so I see it as part of my job to educate them about the different facets of what this abuse looks like so that they can be aware of it. Not because I'm trying to say he does all of these abusive things, right? He may or may not, but just so that they're on her radar so that she can start recognizing what it is. Because I spent 7 years in an emotionally abusive relationship and went down the pornography addiction route, and nobody ever brought that up. And I didn't know I was in an abusive relationship. And all I did was recovery, 12-step pornography addiction things that didn't include the abuse. And in my opinion, in my situation, it completely missed the boat. So I want women to be aware of these things so that they can make sure to ask these things in the disclosure. Are there any other abuse issues that you have found are helpful for women to ask about in the disclosure?
No, I really see the disclosure as the truth telling, the handing over of facts. It's the data exchange. It's not an apology. It's not a time for empathy. I just want the partner to get the information and then have time to absorb it and make sense of it. And then we'll deal with the relational issues later. I want the empathy and the regret expressions to be genuine, but I want them a little later. I just want the partner to have a chance to get the truth of whatever that truth is.
For sure. Right. Things that are coming to my mind really quick are, does he have another phone? How many devices does he have?
Absolutely. Does he have another phone? Does he have other email accounts? Is there another bank account? Absolutely.
Stuff like that. Those are the things that are just coming to my mind right now. Okay. Here's another question from our community. Do you have any tips on how a spouse or former spouse who is not getting a disclosure moves forward?
This is a hard one, because when you don't have a disclosure and you are no longer in the relationship, I find that partners are sometimes left in that swirl of what if, how far does it go? And so I think having a good therapist, a good coach that you can talk to, and a good group so that you don't get caught in the limbo of what if. So seeking resources, seeking support, and don't getting carried away with the what ifs. I think that's the best advice I can give. And to acknowledge that it's hard. You don't get the answers. You're not going to get the information. And that's going to take a lot of time to come to terms with.
Yeah. For me, it's actually been not so bad. And the reason I say that is because what I know is it was something really bad. Right? Like for me, I'm like, what I need to know was, like, twice he left the house at 10 p.m., didn't come back till 3, wouldn't tell me where he went. So I know that's something bad. I don't know exactly what, et cetera. Like I could say, from what I know enough. I know that this is someone who's not safe enough for me to be around, and that's enough for me. I have one saying that may be helpful to listeners who are thinking this, is that if you don't know, then you know. And that meaning, if you're not sure, if you don't have the answers, what you do know is this is someone who's not willing to tell you the truth. And that is not an appropriate person to be married to or to be with or to surround yourself with, right? So if you don't know, then you know this isn't a healthy person who is someone that is going to make a good partner.
No, I like that, because I think you're taking stock of what you do know. And what you do know is that this is a person who is not going to be honorable with you. You do know that this is a person who has walked away from the relationship. And you do know that something's gone on that you probably would not be okay with. So you do know lots, but you don't know the details of the how, what's, and when's, but you do actually know a lot. And that's more of an empowerment focus. So I like that. I like that.
I also like that, like, closure. Like, I need to have this reconciliatory conversation with him to end the relationship or something like that. I hold no contact with my ex, and I never had a discussion with him. He was arrested, and that was the end. And I haven't talked with him since. That was 4 years ago. And to me, I feel a lot of closure. Like, I don't need to know. I don't want to know. Well, I mean, do I not want to know? I don't know. It would be interesting to know, but I don't need to know. I don't feel that. And I think part of it is because I know that wanting sort of that type of closure for me would just keep me in the vortex of abuse. And so because I want to step out of his world and having to interact with him or have conversations with him that don't make sense or that don't end in any, you know, resolvable thing, that closure for me is knowing this is not a healthy enough person to talk to. I can't even have a conversation with him. And if he ever gets to the point where I could, maybe I could. But for now, this is where I'm at. And it feels done to me. It feels like I have closure to myself. And maybe trying to reconcile that with yourself rather than trying to get closure from someone else might be a good way to move forward. Or maybe not. I don't know. But those are some thoughts. Okay, here is the last question from our community. How accurate are lie detector tests? There are many addicts who claim they don't do them because they aren't accurate. Do you use them in your practice? And if so, can you help debunk misunderstandings about their accuracy and effectiveness in reestablishing trust in relationships?
Ooh, these are great questions. So let me start by saying I am not a polygrapher. I am a clinician, so I can give you my clinical side of it. I like polygraphs. I like lie detectors. I use them in my practice if the partner chooses. I always let it be a partner's choice. I recommend them, and I also honor whatever our partners decide. As far as I know, they've got an 80%-ish rate of accuracy. That is not 100%. in my world, that's better than not knowing. Addicts can lie, and these types of addicts, you cannot tell when they're high on their drug. If someone is drunk on alcohol, I can see it in their manner, in the way they speak, and the way their balance is. If someone is high on meth, I can see it in their face, the way they're acting. You cannot tell with a sex addict. And so I think it's better to have a polygraph on the situation, on the disclosure, than to not. That said, if a partner I'm working with says I do not want a polygraph involved, then that is her choice and I support her.
What are some reasons that women cite for not getting a polygraph? We feel the same way that you do, that given the choice, you should definitely get a polygraph because 80% is better than nothing, right? And these men have a history of lying, so the best chance we can have for them telling the truth is what you want to take. What are some of the reasons why women choose not to get them?
Some of the women will say, I believe that I have all the information. I believe that he's telling the truth. It's too expensive, and this is already costing a lot. Everything he's told me is already horrible. So if he's telling me more that's a lie, that doesn't change the fact that it's all horrible anyways. Those are some that come to the top of my mind. 95% of our clients do get the polygraph. The thing about polygraph I really want to make sure folks understand is that it is not a statement of truth, okay? It is his truth. It is what he believes to be true. So if the addict is going through the polygraph, and he thinks he last had this behavior in spring of 2016, and later we find out it was spring of 2015, that doesn't mean he tricked the polygraph, okay? He thought it was spring of 2016. The polygraph is only checking what he thinks to be true. It doesn't check his memory. It doesn't check if he's forgetting. It doesn't check if his memory's wrong. So that's an important piece, that it is a statement of his truth, not the truth. So that's an important piece that partners know before they go in. So if he says this is everything and he passes the polygraph, then he really believes this is everything. There are so many times when, by virtue of exploring, investigating, and researching the data for a disclosure, folks go to a polygraph, they pass. They go into disclosure session, and then that night, the addict will say, I remembered one more thing. And they come to disclosure second day, and they say, I've remembered one more thing I need to tell you about. That is not them manipulating. That is them remembering one more thing. So they didn't manipulate the polygraph. It's just they didn't remember it during the polygraph when it was taken.
Got it. That's really, really good to know, because that being said, if you have someone who, for whatever reason, maybe they have a personality disorder or something, who knows what it is, but for whatever reason, if they truly believe something that isn't true, that my wife punched me in the face, let's just use that as an example. It's a bad example, but they think my wife punched me in the face and you are the wife and you're like, I know I never did that, but he passed the polygraph and he says this happened. Then as the wife, you could know, wow, like, he does not live in reality. That might help you determine that if that were to happen, which is probably very unlikely, but I'm just kind of throwing that out there. At Center for Peace, we did have someone who passed the polygraph and their wife knew that a lot of things that they had said were untrue. So we knew then, okay, like he doesn't live in reality, right? His reality is different than the actual reality, which was an interesting thing. He did not qualify for Center for Peace for that reason. We were like, no, I don't know if we can help you.
That's sometimes when an addict's therapist says, I don't know that the addict is ready for disclosure. Sometimes that's what the addict's therapist is talking about, is this guy is not yet out of his layers of denial enough that he's seeing the full picture, that he can give a really good in-depth disclosure. Now, sometimes, you know, any disclosure is better than none. And so that's the thing with the partner, is that partner needs to understand of, if I get a disclosure now, it may not be as detailed and accurate and in-depth or wide-breadth as it could be later. But sometimes the addict therapist is basically trying to convey, this guy is still in denial. He still thinks what he did was okay in some sort of diluted addictive way. And if he's in recovery longer, he might see that differently once he has more sobriety.
So on that note, for women who are like, I didn't get a disclosure, I need closure, something like that, letting them know that even if you did get a disclosure, it might not even be accurate, right? So you're wishing for something that may not even be possible at all because he's still in denial, or what he thinks is the truth is actually not reality. So your disclosure would not be great anyway.
I wouldn't say that it wouldn't be accurate. I would say it may have been full and complete to the best of his ability at that moment. And then later in time, his best of his ability at that moment would be bigger or maybe better or more in depth or have more awareness or have more compassion, X, Y, or Z. The farther in sobriety they get and the more in recovery.
That's so interesting. On the topic of disclosure, is there anything else you'd like to share with our community? Just a real quick shout out to our community members. Thank you so much for sending in questions. That was super helpful. Is there anything that we haven't covered, Jeannie, that you think that our community needs to know about disclosures?
I think your audience is doing such a great job, and your community is doing such a great job of educating about disclosure. And I know folks want to know the truth and they want to know exactly what happened. And sometimes we need to break disclosure into two pieces, get the safety set items taken care of immediately. And then if they're able to wait a little bit for the bigger, fuller, completer piece, you know, you can break a disclosure into two pieces. It's hard to know that you don't know everything. And disclosure is a very tender time. So just taking good care of yourselves and planning it.
Yeah, thank you. We really appreciate you taking the time to do this.
Thanks so much, Anne. Talk to you soon.
You know, Jeannie talked a lot about getting the right support. And again, Betrayal Trauma Recovery Group, which is our daily online group, is the best, most accessible support out there. So we hope you check out our website, btr.org, and we hope to see you in a session today. If this podcast is helpful to you, please rate it on iTunes. Every single one of your ratings helps isolated women find us. And I also love going through the reviews. Some of them have been so sweet and nice, and I feel so supported when I read those. And I really appreciate those of you who have taken the time to do that. You can support this podcast by going to our website, scrolling down to the bottom, and click on Support the Podcast. We really appreciate all of you who support us with recurring monthly support. So if you have not done that, please go set your monthly support today. And until next week, stay safe out there.